Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
It is late afternoon at the old soldier's home, 3 miles north of Capitol Hill. It's been a sunny day, and recuperating soldiers linger outside, lounging on porch seats and leaning on crutches, enjoying the last warmth of a healing sun as soft evening breezes blow in. The wide panorama of Washington City stretches below. The Capitol building juts skyward, its enlarged dome still under construction. A weary traveler arrives on the road, his dark coat filmed with a layer of light dust kicked up from his horse's hooves and the wheels of passing coaches. It is the president, Abraham Lincoln. After another harried day's work in the humid thrum of the presidential mansion, assaulted by its retinue of visitors and staff with their endless requests and demands, Lincoln dismounts from his horse, brushes himself off, and breathes deep, basking a moment in the fresh air and sunshine. Here, far from the pressures of the mansion, but close enough to still command a war, Lincoln can relax for the evening with his family. As his son Tad dashes towards him on the front path, the president's mind, so knotted with worry and grief, gradually unravels. Good day to you, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to American History Hit. I'm Don Wildman. There is so much to the heroic presidency of Abraham Lincoln, his unlikely rise to the highest office, the great Civil War victory, his violent assassination and martyrdom. One almost forgets the man was a living human being with the character flaws to prove it. The Daniel French sculpture enthroned in the Lincoln Memorial on the National Mall was kind of created for this purpose, to convey the duality of Lincoln's persona. He is a grave and calculating politician considering a multiplicity of options. He is a powerful moral force full of singular purpose. You see it in the words on the walls of that memorial. And then he is this strong, lanky figure gazing out across the mall, challenging the U.S. Capitol and beyond, the nation reborn under his watch. The fact that he is seated, not standing, well, many people then and today still find this an odd choice on the part of the sculptor. But that's the complexity of the man, and that's what we're talking today about. We've spent the two previous episodes on Abraham Lincoln, his years in the White House creating policy, then on his war years as commander-in-chief, the zigzag path to Union victory. Today, we seek out the man himself, his love, his loss, his legacy, in the company of Callie Hawkins, CEO and executive director at President Lincoln's Cottage, a museum in Northwest D.C., a place where Lincoln and his family went to escape the pressures of the White House. Callie is also a fellow podcaster whose series is named Q and Abe. I like that title, Callie. You think of that?
No, actually, my co-host Joan Cummins thought of that, but it's been a lot of fun and it's a great name.
It's a very good one. I commend you.
When considering President Lincoln, the man, I suppose there must be a huge transformation from beginning to end. Trial by fire for any human being, much less a man who becomes president as well. I want to go back to the beginning on this man. You know, we're raised to love Lincoln in this land for good reason, in my opinion, but it's an unusual thing the way we're brought up in this country with this Abraham Lincoln bond. We learn to treat him like family, swinging his axe, telling his stories, ambling along in his folksy way. The image really doesn't suit the man, does it?
It doesn't, but I think that that's also part of the myth of Lincoln that makes him so relatable to people.
Yeah. Much of his personality springs from his Western rural upbringing, not to mention his difficult family life. Very aloof, judgmental father. Let's talk about his upbringing, his early family life.
Yeah, you know, Lincoln was born in a log cabin in Kentucky, and I think that's where the mythical Lincoln really starts, this idea that someone could be born into such humble beginnings and rise to the highest position in the United States. His family lived for a time in Kentucky before moving to Indiana, and then ultimately Lincoln himself moved to Illinois. But I think his rural upbringing really shaped him in ways that we see pop up throughout his life.
One thing interesting just popped in my mind as you were talking. He was born February 12th, 1809. That's 33 years from the Declaration of Independence. That's a fascinating fact. We really think of Lincoln in the Civil War years most commonly, but he is born really just after the founding period, or kind of in within it almost. You know, I think of my birth, I'm 1961, I think of myself of that time, despite the fact that I'm now in 2024. Lincoln also had his feet firmly grounded in that founding era, didn't he?
He did. And I think that, you know, we see him in many ways as president, recognizing that he wasn't so far removed from the founders, yet seeing himself as part of a unique generation that needed to both continue their work and also push their work. And to make good on what he maybe felt like were things that were left out of the founders' ideas about this republic. And so That's one of the things that I think is so fascinating about Lincoln.
So much of the mythology starts when you're a kid. Same with George Washington and the cherry tree and all that. But with Lincoln, I remember playing with my Lincoln logs, which yesterday I was looking at images online and only realized that it was Lincoln logs were designed by Frank Lloyd Wright's son. Weird trivia fact. Didn't even know that. But it's all part of this sensibility that we all raised that this man was a person of the people and that he came from the salt of the earth, you know, all that sort of thing. Pretty true in his case. Tell us about his relationship with his real mother and then his stepmother.
Yeah, his biological mother, Nancy Hanks, who he came to refer to as his angel mother, was such a pivotal and important figure in his life. And I think her death really marks what I think is, you know, a life marked by grief over the loss of so many important figures. But he was incredibly close to his mother, and I think it's fair to say was really devastated by her death. I think the fact that she was so encouraging of him in so many ways, and I think in the ways that Lincoln found special about himself, she was the encourager of those things. I think that mixed with the fact that he had a very fraught relationship with his father, who was so different from him in also so many foundational ways. Her death really rocked him as a young boy. And, you know, I think that maternal figure was incredibly important to young Abraham. And I think that he was extraordinarily fortunate to have had the stepmother that he did, who was also a big encourager of his, with whom he was extraordinarily close.
He's named for his grandfather, is that right?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Come by way of Virginia. So the roots of his life and his ancestry, at least in a couple generations, are back to the South, which is a fascinating fact to consider later on, for sure. Tell me more about this father relationship that he had, because it really does prompt so much later on.
Yeah, you know, I think that the two just really didn't identify with each other. Lincoln was studious. He was really, you know, all that we've read about him, you know, rather reading, wanting to read rather than, you know, working in the fields, I think was just something that his father, who seems like he was a very practical man in some ways and had expectations that his son would be satisfied with, you know, being a farmer and all of these things that Abraham just wasn't. And I think that made for a very difficult relationship. His father also left the family, you know, to go look for a new wife. And I think for a young child, that must have been incredibly difficult for Abraham and his sister to at times be left virtually alone while his father was off looking for a new wife. And so I think these things that happened as a very early child for Abraham just really cemented, I think, a relationship that he struggled with throughout his life.
And all against the backdrop of living a frontier lifestyle, certainly, you know, especially when he was young, this extraordinary feeling of being out in the woods and being in this new land. He was really reading his classics and his Bible and all these texts that he was able to get, and only a few of them, I suppose, in this world. And kind of an interesting idea to think of the clean slate that is when you're being raised in that world, in that rural backdrop, because new ideas can spring from that kind of mind differently than others from more established places.
Oh, I think you're exactly right. And I think that we also see that Lincoln never, as hard as it was, he also never lost sight of his humble beginnings.
Yeah.
And I think that he recognized in many ways that his rise was only possible because, you know, he was a white man.
Yeah.
And that for other people, especially people of color, you know, that just would not have been possible.
When you talk about his wisdom and smarts, you know, that kind of person sees the world differently. They walk into this world and they realize that people, they can call out charlatans. They can see fakery. And that kind of is baked into him very early on, because not only is he raised in this particular way where he doesn't bump up against a lot of that orthodoxy and so forth, he also comes into the world as that very smart kid, but willing to call people out for what they are.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think to take that a step further, he was also willing to call himself out. Mm. And I think that that is one of the things that sort of sticks with me. You know, I've worked here at the cottage in different positions for the last 15 years. And one of the things that I will say to people is that over that time, I have cultivated a deep personal relationship with Lincoln. And one of the things that I love the most about him is that if you think of him and his character and his humanity as like an onion, when you peel the layers back, you realize that he really is who you thought he was.
Yes.
And I think that that's because he was incredibly self-effacing.
Yeah.
He had the ability to recognize when he made missteps and mistakes. And I think that, you know, that only comes from someone who is incredibly self-assured.
Sure. A great deal of confidence, yes.
A great deal of confidence. And you wonder how someone who was born into the situation that he was born into, how did that happen? How was he able to cultivate such an extraordinary sense of self and also, you know, have had the struggles that he had? And that's one of the things I find incredibly fascinating about him.
We're spending a lot more time than I expected on his childhood, but I think it really is his trial by fire. You know, those emotional journeys that he has to take early on, be broken down and build himself back up with these amazingly difficult things that happened to him that set him off in his teen years, I suppose, with a different kind of moxie than another type of youngster would have. What draws him to politics? Has anyone ever identified that trigger moment?
We know he was incredibly intelligent. I think he had a curiosity that was insatiable. And we see that from the time he was a young man. And I also think, you know, because he was such a voracious reader, he was constantly reading politics, political satire.
Yeah.
He was constantly reading about this. And, you know, I think that he was formed in many ways by the generation that he grew up in and the ideals of Henry Clay, who he said was the beau ideal of a statesman. And I think just sort of living in that shadow and being as curious as he was and also maybe being driven to continue making good on some of the founding principles and early ideas of this country may have driven him.
I can imagine this guy, you know, so much happened around the stores in those days out there in the wilderness. You know, the general store would have been the place where everyone gathered. And the arguments that would have been going on and the bumping up against local politicians, the judge who comes through and judges things, you can just sort of see that world being incredibly appealing to him, especially in light of the fact that he's growing up under the shadow of this rather unpleasant father who doesn't want any part of any of that stuff.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I don't want to rob Lincoln. I think that we do this a little bit in terms of how we think about him and talk about him. He was incredibly politically savvy in a way that I think some of it could have been learned, but I also think some of it was just his nature. I think you're right, though, about the stores and these local politicians, especially just being a part of his everyday life, I think he was extraordinarily driven to be successful.
There's a very important chapter we've talked about in another episode of these three about when he goes on these river trips. He gets a job, jumps on a boat, and does a flatboat down the Mississippi River once and then twice, I believe. These are extraordinary, almost Huck Finn types of experiences for him, I imagine, where you see America moving past you, you know, the whole wholeness of this new nation, and especially his first encounters with slavery. Does he write about that early on? Does he recognize his feelings about that stuff yet?
He certainly does. And I think the other thing that that we know about these particular trips that goes back to his relationship with his father, when he got home, he handed over all of his earnings
yes.
to his father because that was the expectation. So I think you have this sort of injustice, perceived injustice from having, you know, being an adult and then having to hand over all of the money that he had earned to his father. And then seeing the injustice of enslavement and reflecting on that, these trips, as you said, were certainly extraordinarily pivotal moments mm-hmm. for him as a young man.
Callie, let's talk about his love life. So he meets Mary Todd later. He's first engaged to someone named Mary Owens. Let's talk about these early days of his love life.
Lincoln, for as self-assured as he was in so many areas of his life, I think that he was a little less assured in relationships. And I think that some of that, you know, may have had to do with the fact that, you know, he did have such a fraught relationship with his father and his mother died. And so I don't think he had a lot of, certainly there was the example of his father and his stepmother, but I don't think he had a lot of really great examples of relationship and being in relationship with someone else. And so Mary Owens, as you say, that was a broken engagement. There's lots of speculation, too, about the relationship that he had with Anne Rutledge and a broken relationship with her. And, you know, I think that there's certainly a lot of speculation about relationships that he had with other people. And I think sometimes, you know, I know we'll get to his relationship with Mary Todd, but I think sometimes we focus a lot on these other relationships to maybe cast a shadow of doubt on the love that he shared with Mary Todd. So I think that Lincoln was probably much like any of the rest of us, you know, in early relationships, probably a bit unsure and inexperienced.
Yeah. There's something I completely relate to this, and I think many people do, which you've already mentioned, this ability of his to call himself out. I think that has a lot to do with his relationships, from what I understand, because he knows he comes from very, very modest means. And in those worlds, really coupling up was a much more practical thing than perhaps we make it out to be today, less romantic perhaps. And he would have seen himself as less than in many regards. He's the one that sort of invites Mary Owens to call off the engagement. Not a bad idea, he suggests.
That's great. I do love that story. I'm sure that there are a number of us who can relate
but
to
it's
that.
But it's this pragmatist idea of Lincoln that he will carry into all kinds of venues of his life, but it certainly shows up in his love life as well. So let's talk about Mary Todd. Theirs is a bit more of a political move for him. She does come from quite a background. Her family is from Lexington, Kentucky, am I right?
Yep, she was from a well-positioned family, a slaveholding family. She had been, you know, really brought up with finer things and had many more opportunities for education than Abraham Lincoln had. And in Lincoln's first election, you know, Mary made a big deal about how she knew every single one of the politicians involved in this election fairly intimately and fairly well. She grew up just down the road from Henry Clay. And so politics, while we may not have seen women as a big part of politics, that was very much a part of her early life and adolescence and young adulthood. And so she in many ways was very well positioned for her ultimate first lady role. And may have even had political ambitions of her own in ways that just couldn't have been realized in the 19th century.
They were married. Where was he in his political career at the time of their marriage?
When Abraham and Mary Lincoln became involved with each other, Lincoln was a young legislator in Illinois. By 1840, Lincoln was campaigning with the Whig Party and very much aligned himself with Whig ideals.
So she had married a man who was on the rise and would have been aware of this. I'm always curious about these, I mean, the famous couplings that go on to become president and first ladies, how much of an engine she was to his rise, a motivator of what he was looking for, or was it, could Lincoln have done it alone?
That's a really great question. And I think it's pure speculation on my part. Honestly, we'll never know. I think, you know, there's that great joke that may be a bit speculative, but when asked how she felt about her husband being elected president, she said, you know, any husband of mine would have been president of the United States.
She is often characterized, I know in the Spielberg movie, as very, very political and very, very savvy about what levers to pull.
And, you know, Lincoln had served four terms in the state legislature by the time they got married. And so he, you know, had a political career. He, you know, then went on to win a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives, which was fairly short-lived. But I think what she did more than anything is maybe recognize that this was within him, recognize a bit that perhaps this was, that he was what this nation needed at this particular moment in time. And I think that she was a great encourager of his. And I think that wouldn't we all love to have the great fortune of having someone in our corner
who,
you know, could propel us forward in the way that she did.
She is an enigmatic figure. She becomes quite a story even after his death. It's extraordinary.
I'll be back with more American history after this short break.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
A big subject in general with Lincoln, and I know there is a current exhibition at your museum about this, is his the subject of grief. An enormous amount of speculation about his depression, his tendency towards depression, understandable given the amount of grief that this man had gone through and how he would be tilted in the world. Let's talk about that in general of this malady.
Yeah, you know, again, I think that that's one of the things that we won't really ever know. But I think that certainly the tremendous amount of grief and then traumatic grief, because anyone who experiences the loss of a child, much less two children, because two of their four boys died in Lincoln's lifetime, that's considered traumatic grief. And I think that that certainly took a toll. And then you have the added, you know, collective grief of the nation during the Civil War. And I think that, you know, Lincoln's, I'm using air quotes, melancholy, as it was described, would likely be what we would consider some form of depression. You know, we know that both of the Lincolns struggled with their mental health. It's never sat particularly well with me that much of the scholarship around Lincoln's melancholy or his struggles with mental health, the way that that's been remembered is that that further propelled him to greatness and is part of the reason that we remember him for the person that we do today, contrasted with the way that society has viewed Mary Lincoln, and this idea of the Crazy Mary myth that just further demonstrates a disparity in the way that we view men and women's mental health. And I think that that's something that certainly deserves a lot more attention in the scholarship. But I think that we see this in a number of ways. You know, Walt Whitman, who recorded many of the most beautiful, I think, lines and reflections of just seeing President Lincoln along his daily commute from the cottage down to the White House, wrote about the deep cut lines and the latent sadness in his expression. This was a man who was probably prone to melancholy. I read a book recently that was an incredible book, not at all about Abraham Lincoln, but who describes him as the quintessential bittersweet, this longing and this sense of longing for things and being okay in many ways with being a bit melancholy, and that his natural sort of personality was a bit, again, a bit bittersweet, and that he could sit in that and that was okay.
It was the perspective that that level of intelligence can see so much, you know, the forest for the trees of life and society, coupled with his personal feelings, which tended towards the he called them defective nerves, was a quote of his in 1841. I mean, he was very aware of this tendencies. I mean, you run into this with Winston Churchill. There's all kinds of people who have this tendency, who have reached the highest levels of leadership. Somehow it goes hand in hand for me, this recognition that is in them of the great grief in life, and they can hold that at the same time with the aspirations that they're trying to lead people towards. It seems like a very unique quality that certainly applies to Lincoln, made only the more grievous because of the Civil War and all that was happening, all the men he's sending to their deaths. Oh, my Lord, it's an incredible hard time he goes through in life.
Yeah, and the personal struggle of, you know, I mean, he had a son who was the age of many of the veterans or the Civil War soldiers who were being essentially buried in his front yard at the cottage.
Yes.
And this son, you know, very much wanted to be part of the war. And he, you know, his wife, Mary Lincoln, was saying, you cannot allow him to go to the front lines. I cannot possibly lose another child.
Yes.
And so I think he carried the weight of that as well as a husband and also a father and commander in chief. It was tremendous what he must have been experiencing.
It was, I think, while some of the same themes resonate through with Robert as happened with him as a kid, in general, he is known to be a very a delightful father. He delighted in his children and was a very happy parent, right?
Right. Devoted. I think that it's also probably fair to say that he was a bit permissive, especially with the younger boys. You know, his relationship with Robert was a little bit different. Robert, of course, was the oldest child who, in many ways, was coming of age, or some of his earliest memories would have been, you know, with Lincoln traveling the circuit in Illinois, away from home much of the time. And so I think that in those very early formative years, when their bond may have been solidified, Lincoln probably just wasn't around a lot because of his career as a lawyer. As we see Robert grow and get older, you know, and certainly after Lincoln's death, I imagine his own personal weight of having to live in the shadow of his father must have also been great. And I think that's what we tend to deny these people, or these very human, you know, very real emotional experiences that I think are certainly understandable.
Callie, let's name these sons that they have. There's Eddie, died 1850, probably from tuberculosis. Willie, died 1862. Thomas Tad dies 1871. Only one of these children lives their full life, which is Robert, and two of them die while Lincoln's alive. It's an extraordinary journey they have as parents, these two people. And it was Willie, really, who sets Mary off on quite a chapter of time at the White House. I mean, she was really going through it.
As you noted, you know, Robert was the only one of their four children who knew all of his siblings. Fairly shortly after Eddie died, Mary was pregnant with Willie. And so their children didn't overlap, is the point that I'm trying to make. And by the time the Lincolns lost Willie, who, you know, there's some conjecture that perhaps Willie was Lincoln's favorite child in many ways because he saw a lot of himself in Willie and a very curious and mischievous nature mm-hmm. that Willie had, it really yes. devastated them. Mrs. Lincoln could never return to the room in the White House where he died. And President Lincoln is remembered as saying, you know, the blow overwhelmed me. Mrs. Lincoln, after Willie's death, said, everything seems a mockery. And I think for the two of them, it was, you know, just an incredibly difficult blow at a really tremendously difficult time.
Not to mention the poor woman is sitting next to her husband when he is shot and killed several years later. I mean, it's extraordinary what these people go through. No wonder she never recovered, you know, is speculated that she ends up, her son puts her into an asylum in 1875, obviously due to the trauma of all of this stuff. I want to pause in my list of subject matter because it's so interesting to me that you have this museum. The cottage was a real escape for Lincoln. Tell me about how that was used, where it is, the proximity for him and how he got there and all that sort of thing. How did the cottage play a role in their lives?
Yeah, so we think that President Lincoln likely found out about this house as it's on the grounds of the what was then called the U.S. Soldiers' Home. Cottage is a bit of a misnomer. It's a 34-room country estate. So it is a cottage in the way that the Vanderbilts, you know, had cottages in Newport, Rhode Island. It is not a cabin. A lot of people are quite surprised when they come and see a rather large house. But we think that Lincoln found out about the cottage likely from his predecessor, James Buchanan, who had lived in another house on the grounds here of the Soldiers' Home. And, you know, it's on a hilltop 3 miles north of the White House. And so we think that it's, again, very likely that Buchanan passed that along to Lincoln. The Lincolns were from the frontier and didn't have a family home nearby. And mm-hmm. so there wouldn't have been another place convenient for them if they wanted to sort of get away. We know that the family first visited the grounds a few days after Lincoln's first inauguration. And in a really interesting twist of fate and way that the site bookends Lincoln's presidency, he was last seen riding the grounds the day before his assassination. So they ultimately ended up spending a quarter of Lincoln's presidency out here from roughly June to November of 62, 63, and 64. And the family had planned to come out the first hot season that Lincoln was president, and a little thing happened at Fort Sumter, and Lincoln knew that he needed to be downtown. But by the next hot season, you know, they were still very much reeling from Willie's death, and I think desperate for a measure of comfort and a measure of quiet. Yeah. And that's what ultimately led them out here.
In those days, the president was much more a part of normal life in Washington, could be walking around even up into the days of Harry Truman. But certainly Lincoln was known to be horseback riding his way back and forth with the cottage, right? People saw him a lot.
Absolutely. And he often rode alone. There was no such thing as Secret Service then. And really only by coming out here to the cottage and really moving life out here for 13 of the 50 months that he was president, did anyone suggest that Lincoln should probably have a cavalry escort. He accepted that very reluctantly, and many mornings was seen, you know, riding alone into the city. The cavalry would also record that they would get out here to the cottage and find Lincoln's empty breakfast plate and, you know, have to rush to catch up back downtown with him. But one of my favorite stories of Lincoln on his daily commute from the cottage to the White House and then back in the evening, a young woman who wrote that she and her father were riding down what was then the 7th Street Turnpike in D.C., and they approached what looked to be a rusty, dusty old farmer. And only when they got up close did they realize that it was the President of the United States.
Wow.
I just love that visual because it is so foreign to our experience.
Yes.
Today.
I hope he had a very clever anecdote that day. Callie, it's often speculated that Joshua Speed and Abraham Lincoln's relationship was romantic. Is there any truth to that you know, or are we applying modern day sensibilities to this?
It's a question that we explored in season 5 of our Q&A podcast. It's a question that we get asked a lot by visitors. And I think that, you know, the way we address that in the podcast is that there really is no way to know. And is it even the right question?
Yeah.
As you suggest, in some ways we're imposing 21st century terminology or 20th century terminology onto, you know, 19th century people. The mm-hmm. two clearly had a great admiration for one another, a great affection for each other. Was it sexualized? We don't know. And, you know, I think that one of the beauties of questions like this is that, you know, this was such an incredibly important relationship to Lincoln, to Lincoln's life, and shaped him in many ways. You know, the things that we know are that the two men shared a bed above Joshua Speed's store for about 3.5 years, something that, you know, we wouldn't necessarily attribute today as normalized social behavior among friends necessarily. And we know that their letters, the only ones that have survived are Lincoln's responses to Speed's letters. We don't actually have Speed's letters to Lincoln, but they do hint at a very close relationship. One of the funny parts of a letter that come out in a book written by a man named Chuck Strozier about this relationship between Joshua Speed and Abraham Lincoln was around the time that Joshua Speed himself got married, and Lincoln's desperation of knowing what consummation of that marriage looked like. Hmm. And Strozier wrote that, you know, Speed must have rolled over and 10 minutes later written Lincoln a letter, because Lincoln talks about how he, you know, he can't stop thinking about what was in Joshua Speed's letter. I think this sort of speaks to also this area of Lincoln's life that, I don't know if inexperienced is the right word, but an area of his life where he felt really, he lacked some of the self-assuredness that we see in other aspects of his life. So they clearly were close.
I don't want to be naive about this. You know, quite possibly there was a romantic relationship. The truth is, men were often in boarding house situations, sleeping in the same beds. It was a very common situation. And what's more, affectionate foreign language was often in these kinds of letters of the age. So it's really hard. I guess the point we're really making is, despite the rumors, despite the facts even, it's hard for us to even speculate from a modern day standpoint.
Yeah, you know, I think that's right. We talked to a scholar, Hugh Ryan, who has done a lot of work and a lot of research on 19th century relationships. And one of the things that he talked a lot about was the idea of homosocial love.
Yeah.
And homosocial love was absolutely appropriate in the 19th century. And Hugh went on to say that, you know, and to really make the point that their relationship may or may not have had sexual dimensions. We'll never know. And that's really a 20th century construct, and
sure,
and would not have been something that, you know, was really talked about or was even really a thing to be made of. And I think from our perspective as an historic site, you know, one of the things that is really important to us is to open up the idea and the conversation with modern audiences about, so what if he was?
Right, exactly.
Let's open ourselves up to this possibility.
Was it a stir in Washington at all? Was that part of the controversy of it?
Oh, I don't think so. No, I mean, we know here at the cottage that he shared a bed with one of the commanders of the Bucktail soldiers who guarded him out here. And mm-hmm. he did that when Mary was gone. And, you know, people would talk about it, you know, talk about, you know, isn't that interesting? But nothing more really was, you know, was made of it.
A very short period of time after the surrender at Appomattox, Mary and Abraham go to the theater very famously, and he is shot by an assassin. This is on Good Friday, April 14th, 1865. You can't write the stuff. I mean, it's an unbelievably epic qualities to all of this. It leads to an enormous national mourning, and that's the fascinating part of it, is really it's a catharsis for the nation that has just gone through 4 years of war.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is one of those moments that just, a bit of a personal note as a bereaved mother myself, just to me is extraordinarily difficult to fathom, because in the immediate aftermath of Lincoln's assassination, carrying all of the grief and trauma that she did into that event, you know, she was denied access to her husband because the men around him decided that they just didn't want to have to deal with her. And I think about how incredibly unfair that was for her. I mean, you know, part of me wants to say, like, how the heck do people expect her to behave? You know, her husband had just been murdered right beside her. And so I think immediately after that is just one of the saddest moments, I think, in Mary's life. And I think that you bring up such an interesting point about it being Good Friday, because, and you also mentioned earlier that her only surviving child had her committed to a mental institution. Mm. And in part, that was because of behaviors that she exhibited around the Easter holiday. I know in my own grief journey, these anniversaries are extraordinarily difficult. And I think if you're also struggling at the same time with your mental health, it can lead to moments of behavior that are just outside of social norms. And so I think that this was certainly marked an incredibly difficult period for the nation. No one, though, was more affected by his death than his wife.
The train that goes around the country, I mean, this is the first time a president's been assassinated, so it's the first time the country is processing it. This train travels the journey that he had taken to Washington, finding its way back to Springfield, Illinois, where you can visit his grave to this day. It's a huge monument in this cemetery. Have you been there, Callie?
I have. I had considered myself probably for the first 13 years that I worked here an entire Lincoln fraud because I had not visited Springfield until last October. And my colleague and co-host of Q&A, Joan Cummins, and I had the great honor of being in the tomb completely alone.
Wow.
We got there first thing in the morning before anybody else was there, and we were the first people through. Just being in that space and being there with his boys, three boys, right across from him, it just was an incredibly stirring moment. It is quite a spectacle, this tomb.
Yeah.
And I found myself, I'm not going to lie, I found myself wondering what Lincoln himself would have made of this.
I had the same feeling. I was on my way to the airport and realized I had done an appearance in Springfield, and I realized, oh, I hadn't seen the tomb. And so the taxi driver steered me right into the cemetery, and I said, oh, my Lord, as we came up to it. It's a very, very outsized thing. But the process of mourning goes hand in hand with the beginning of the publication of more books written about Lincoln than any other American hero. Maybe George Washington comes close, but it just is endless, the amount of intellectual curiosity about this man and the careers that are made on writing books about them. And the museums that have opened, which brings me to the segue back to the original question, which is, so this Lincoln's Cottage, how can people go there and what's going on at this time? I mean, is it open as we speak?
Yeah, we're open 7 days a week. We do guided tours of the cottage with really phenomenal guide staff who deliver these tours on the hour, every hour from 10 a.m. until 3 p.m. We have a visitor center that has exhibits inside. And as you mentioned, a really stunning exhibit that opened a couple of years ago called Reflections on Grief and Child Loss. And the cottage itself is very humble in so many ways. You know, I talked about how large it is, but our entire interpretive approach is around furnishing the cottage not with the things that would have surrounded the Lincolns there. All of the furniture that they brought with them when they lived here was White House furniture. So it's mostly empty inside today. But we furnish it instead with the ideas that he thought about and was thinking through while he was living here. And these really human moments that people maybe aren't aware of. They're stories of the people who came to see Lincoln out here and really puzzled through some of the most difficult moments in our nation's history.
What an adventure in contrast to see your cottage with the Lincoln Memorial in the same day.
Exactly. You know, we talk about that a lot. We actually have a sculpture, a standing Lincoln sculpture that is life size, standing by his horse. And, you know, in many ways, we were very aware of the contrast of, you know, this other large looming Lincoln figure enshrined in a temple, seated on a throne that you can't touch. He's very much larger than life downtown at the Lincoln Memorial. And here, you know, people can walk up to the statue. People can touch the mantles in the cottage. They can hold on to the banister that Lincoln held on to every night as he very wearily pulled himself up the stairs to sleep at
night. Wow, that's cool. It hasn't been open for, I mean, relatively speaking, it's 2008, right? It opened up?
We opened since 2008, which means we're relatively new as far as historic sites go.
Sure, gosh. Well, I'll also be a fan of your podcast, Q and Abe, which is my favorite title going these days. And I really appreciate you coming on the show. Nice to meet you.
Thank you so much, Don. It was very nice to meet you.
hope you enjoyed this episode of American History Hit. Please remember to like, review, and subscribe. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts. And I'll see you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Thank you for listening to this episode of American History Hit. Please follow the show wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps us, and you'll be doing us a big favor. Don't forget, you can also listen to all these podcasts ad-free and watch hundreds of documentaries when you subscribe at historyhit.com/subscribe. As a special gift, you'll also get your first 3 months for just $1 a month when you use code AmericanHistory at checkout.